This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey guys, quick thing. The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by Mook Delivery, bringing you the food you love. Mook Delivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with Mook Delivery. So the only question left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Arsenal managed to mastermind a 0-0 result at Manchester City that has got everyone up in arms. But what did Mikel Arteta do, which managed to get the result on Sunday evening? This is the Let's Talk Arsenal show. Hello and welcome to the Gooner Talk, back again with you guys for another episode of what is our Let's Talk Arsenal show. I'm joined as always by somebody from the brilliant world of Arsenal content creation, and this week I'm joined from the different knock, Alex. How you doing, mate? You good? You well?
Very good, sir. I've just noticed your Rudiger thing. I don't know what that's for. That's very good.
Yes, mate. Yes. Very good. I'm not just a pretty face. No, we've got quips too. How are you?
I'm not bad, mate. I'm not bad. Yeah, I've done a lot of talking about this so far today. So, yeah, looking forward to hearing a different perspective than myself. So, yeah.
Yeah, and in the chat box, I imagine there'll be plenty. However, how we differ, I'm not sure how much we will, but there's sure to be plenty of opinions in the chat box and throughout, and in the comment section after the show, of course, as well. Let us know your thoughts on what we discussed today, of course, on catch-up. But Arsenal managed to get away from City with a 0-0 result, which has sparked, I have to say, probably the biggest amount of... I'm actually surprised at the reaction to the game. I genuinely was naive enough to think that Arsenal might get praised for their performance. But it turns out, no. Doesn't matter what Arsenal do. Even if they end a 57-game run of consecutive goal-scoring feats by City, Arsenal still are on the end of criticism. Alex,
my favourite part of it was Gary Neville saying he was shocked that that's how the game went. I was like,
oh really?
have you been living under a rock? Like seriously? Like this is exactly how I would say 90% of people predicted it would go. So yeah, it was incredible.
I was so surprised to see people like Neville, for instance, suggesting that it was a surprising way the game played out. Like, did they expect Arsenal to do what they'd done every time that has seen them get beaten pretty confidently and competently each time?
I think what they're really after is us getting smashed, aren't they? That's what they're really saying is they want intensity. And yeah, because look, okay, yeah, let's talk perspectives, because you know it's understandable. I think football, I always say this, like, you know, The online fan media and people who are sort of involved in these types of conversations, it's a very slim majority of actual overall fan bases. I think something like the Arsenal fan base is estimated to be like 40 million, 50 million people. So, you know, the amount of people in this stream compared to, you know, however many people in the Arsenal fan base, the amount of people even watching yesterday who would call themselves Arsenal fans, it's probably only half of them. Do you know what I mean? So the amount of diminishing returns in terms of, you know, who is the Arsenal fans? And there are a million valid ways to watch football. A valid way to watch football is to go, have a pint, swear at the referee, and never think about it again. That is a valid way to watch football. And so it is valid for rival fans to expect a more exciting game. But then I always say, then you cross the line into analysis. When you're trying to analyze the game in a different way, you have to start thinking in a different way. And I think you have to start thinking a bit like this. Would you have taken 4 points from Man City and Liverpool at the beginning of the season? Every single person I know, and I'm sure almost everyone here, would say that that they would. And I put it like this. You can either, you have two choices, in my opinion. You can either say Pep is one of the GOATs, one of the GOATs, and I would argue is the GOAT, but up to you. And Man City are one of the greatest Premier League teams of all time. I would argue they are, personally, just because they're doing it in the modern era, and I think that's, you know, competitive level's gone up. But whatever, they're one of the great teams. Mm-hmm. You can have that and then say Arsenal, you know, perhaps, you know, could have got a better result or whatever. But there's this idea that you hold that opinion, that they are one of the greatest teams of all time, that Pep is one of the greatest coaches of all time, and then we should have bettered them. We should have beaten them twice this season. It is a disappointment. It is a failure not to do that. How do those two things go hand in hand? I really don't think people hear themselves when they say, yeah, that's the greatest manager of all time. You should have done better. You should have beaten twice this season. Of course, we would have loved to win. But to not say it's a good result to get 4 points out of Man City this season, I just... I don't know. I just don't get it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Absolutely. The expectations around Arsenal just seem to move like the goalposts that continuously want to be moved by people whenever talking about Arsenal. It's like we move them until we can find a place where we can put them into a bottle and shake them about to criticise them in some way, shape or form. And after this game, it was, no, it's not the fact that Arsenal have pulled off a very good display in terms of holding out one of the teams that you just simply... never not scoring, you know, in terms of their home record. And we've now moved it to, well, Arsenal are a team that are now boring to watch and they're not coming like Liverpool do to, you know, Manchester City and play their game. Liverpool have never beaten Manchester City in the league at the Etihad under Pep Guardiola with Jurgen Klopp there. It's just not happened. He's never done it. The first time he won at Man City was obviously when Manuel Pellegrini was there. But as soon as Guardiola took over, in the 9 years that he's been there, they have never beaten City in the league where Guardiola's been manager. And it's like all these fans coming out and saying, oh, respect to Liverpool because they go to Man City and try to play their game and try to, you know, beat City. But from my perspective, I don't think Arsenal set up with the Mourinho tags that you get. I don't think Arsenal set up in that way at all. And I think that that was evident by the fact that they started Jorginho, for starters, who is not designed to be a player that's... In a kind of low block system. He's your orchestrator, your string puller. And not only that, but Odegaard obviously came out after the game, was speaking to Sky and saying we defended more than we wanted to and we were deeper than we wanted to be and we didn't plan, you know, for that. I think they planned to be more offensive, but Manchester City were Manchester City. And so they were so good that they forced us back and we had to adapt and change what we wanted to do. And that meant trying to hit them on the counter more and playing deeper and having the wingers kind of tuck in at times as well, because that's what good teams do. They adapt and change to what the opposition is putting up to you. And yet somehow these taglines of anti-football and Mourinho. And I was chatting to a friend of mine who I've worked with, who's a Chelsea fan called Dan Childs, yesterday on social media about this. And he was saying that, you know, Arsenal fans used to moan about Mourinho and how he approached games. And now we're lauding this performance. And I'm like, I think that's just tribalism anyway. Like back in the day, that's just what fans used to bite back at one another about how teams were successful. But the reality is, I don't think we went out to play the way we ended up playing. And actually, it was more of an adaptation through the game.
I completely agree. And I think the delineation you have to do is what I said. It's like analysis and fan baiting. It's like, there will always be new hoops to jump through from fans. You know, even if we won the treble this season, it would be, well, can they go and do it again? So there's the fan side of it. And obviously,
it has been for City. Yeah. Was asked. I remember that press conference. He was like, What do you mean again? That's ridiculous.
Exactly. So, and the problem is obviously fans, and it used to be a very separate, you know, 15 years ago or so, that sort of, that line was very much more, sort of split down the middle between, you have, you know, broadcast media and people who speak in there and they do the analysis and fans watch and sit and don't take part. And now that's kind of massively blurred. But yeah, when you're trying to, when you're on Sky and you're in those sorts of positions and you're trying to do that, the idea that, you know, the onus was all on sort of how Arsenal played and how Arsenal, well, hang on a minute. They're playing the treble winners, and B, other teams get to do tactics as well. It's not, you know, if we come onto the game tactically in terms of what you were just discussing, I do think Arsenal came out to play in a different way. And I think the selection of Jorginho is 100% a good shout to indicate that we would have done something different. But I would also suggest that the way City counterpressed, the ability that they had to stop to shut down Saliba in possession, how they used Kovacic to stop our press and evade our press, that as we had done in the Community Shield, and at the Emirates, it's almost like they have a good manager who watches games and goes, maybe we could do something different. Or just a shout. Maybe they have some tactics too. Mm. So I think we always, you know, understandably, we're Arsenal fans, right? And mostly Arsenal fans. So we look at it from our perspective. But if we just take a little step back, what's happened here is Pep's come out. He has probably made some changes that Arteta couldn't quite respond to. And we had to play a different way. We had to sit back in more of a mid-block. But we did that really well. So it's okay. So it's okay to come out of the game going, would that be the way Arteta would dream, love that game to play out? Of course not. He'd love 100% field tilt. He'd love a 6-0 win. We're walking away with the title, right? Of course. But once you're in that situation, you're up against the best manager of all time. The best man, listen, the best manager of all time. Maybe he's going to have things that can stop you playing. Maybe. So maybe we can take that perspective and just shift it slightly and go, yeah, Arteta is showing that, you know, we've still got a way to go, and that's absolutely fine before we consistently dominate these types of games. And if you look at it overall, I'm taking 2 wins out of 3 this season. But yeah, you know, once we got into that position, we defended incredibly in the mid-block. We were really careful not to jump out of our pockets too much. The way Jesus and Saka played in terms of dropping when they needed to and sort of giving them, you know, blocking the central areas but allowing them the pockets and then jumping in and out was really solid. I love, you know, we'll probably come on to it, but I love the Saliba and Gabriel performances. So yeah, you know, I just think taking a step back and going, you know, I think sometimes there feels like, you know, if we don't win, it's because we play terribly, and if we win, it's because we play brilliantly. We have to start sometimes going, actually, maybe, you know, it's more less black and white.
Yeah, I think the point about, you know, Pep is kind of akin to the argument that everyone has forgotten who we were playing. You know, everyone's forgotten the idea that it was Arsenal at the Etihad, and Man City are, you know, a decent side, it turns out. You know, who can cause you problems. And
don't go too far out there, Tom. But, you know,
I'm used to putting opinions on the precipice, but that maybe does take the biscuit in terms of those. But yeah, you pointed out a couple of things. I wanted to go into the kind of the selections that Arteta went for, and whether or not, even if it was as good as it could have been, maybe there were some things that we thought maybe we could have done differently. I in my lineup for the game had it as is, other than Jesus. I chose Trossard over Jesus for my lineup just because I thought, and it kind of did in some ways play out, that Trossard for me is probably our best finisher at the club. I think there is an argument that he's up there as, when you get him in the box, he's got the best chance of scoring the chances that he gets into. And I know that he had an opportunity in this game, which he struck with his left foot straight at Ortega, ironically in a very similar position to the goal that he scored against Liverpool with his left foot, of course. And starting Jesus, I think, was obvious from a tactical perspective. He's better in the air. And so when we were like pinging all these balls out from Raya, long balls out to Havertz to win, Jesus is better equipped to win those aerial duels than Trossard is. But obviously it meant, and I think Jesus is better off the ball than Trossard is defensively. He comes back in, he's happy to defend and fight and harry more so than perhaps Trossard is. But in the Porto game, obviously, when Trossard got his goal, he didn't have a particularly great game, Trossard, that fixture. But get him in the box, get him in that area, give him a chance, and he's got a great chance of scoring it because of his finishing ability. So he would have been the one that I maybe would have looked at differently, but absolutely understand why Arteta went with Jesus tactically from the point of view of the distribution decisions that we were making. And then obviously we've touched upon Jorginho, which by design I think was the plan not to play the way we wanted, and is a big reason, I think, against the argument that Arsenal came to just sit back. And obviously coming off in the second half of Partey, I think it was a good cameo from Partey, which we may touch upon also. But what did you make of the selection? And were there any changes that you, with the benefit of hindsight now, of course, perhaps may have made?
Yeah. Raya, I think Raya and the back four I would have gone with. I think the only thing I'd say about Kibior is that development. Yeah, I think I tweeted about this. You know, he was in 2021, he was playing in Slovakia. I think he was in a B team in 2020. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, to be playing these games, you know, at that level, and to be selected over Tomiyasu, who we don't know exactly the fitness situation, but he's been available for a while. So, and Zinchenko, you know, I find this really interesting, similar to Jesus. you know, a year ago, imagine saying to people, yeah, we're going to be playing Zinchenko at the Etihad. And I would say 70, 80, 90% of Arsenal fans wouldn't have Zinchenko in their 11. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. And I also made a video about Kibiol saying he'd displace him at the beginning of the year. So I feel very, 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 what's the word?
Justified.
Smug. Yeah.
Vindicated. Smug, vindicated. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, maybe vindicated or smug.
All of them.
All of them. So, yeah, I like the Kibiol. Maybe we could discuss him individually, but I like that as a pick. Yeah, the midfield was something I was discussing the Canon podcast with Babs and George, and we were just talking about it, and we were saying George was sort of advocating for Partey in terms of historical precedence, and Babs and I were sort of on the Jorginho side. I think if we were going to control the game more, you know, it's easy to say sat here now, if knowing the game we had on our plates at the Etihad yesterday, I probably would have started Partey, but we didn't know that. You know, I was hoping that we would be able to play through their press a little bit better. I'd like to see as, you know, in the way that, for example, Liverpool went properly man-to-man, the way Jorginho baited McAllister caused them so many issues. Mm-hmm. So I was keen to see Jorginho pre-game, but obviously, you know, post-game, you have a different perspective. So yeah, I didn't hate the midfield. And then, yeah, going forward, I like your Trossard shout. I think the thing with Jesus, do I want to say this? So I think what Arteta likes in his wide players is not that they become predictable in a negative sense, but predictable. Like Saka is reliable in terms of ball progression, in terms of you could get the most progressive passes received in the league, most progressive carries. Martinelli is always going to make those runs into those channels. He's always going to be high and wide. Like there's a predictability to what they do. There's other elements of the game that's less predictable, but then the middle can become a little bit more, you know, I can jump in that pocket or this pocket and be a bit more sort of relative to the game. I think with Jesus, he just, for me, when he plays on the wing, I don't know what he is. I don't know whether he's going to take his man on. I don't know whether he's going to be there for the progressive pass. I don't know whether he's going to come inside. I don't know whether he's going to drop back. I just don't know what he is. That could be because he hasn't played enough. You know, that's completely fair. Mm. But at the moment, I just think I felt like people like Kivior, Havertz, Rice, and so on, that it felt disconnected to me between on that side. And when Tomiyasu and Trossard came on, they felt like a bit more of an understanding, a bit more of a sort of a as Rohan Jeevan would say, cooperative superiority, which is essentially they know how to play with each other. Mm. So yeah, I like the Jesus shout. I understand the sort of long kicking from Raya, which wasn't amazing yesterday.
But no, it wasn't. That's not what we bought him for, to be fair. Like I know he got a lot of criticism for his distribution yesterday in terms of going on, but I think that when people criticise Raya for his distribution, and it happened at the start of the season with his short passing, which has come on leaps and bounds, you know, at the beginning of the campaign, he's doing that by design. Like, this isn't a choice of his that he's doing. He's working on instructions from Arteta in how he's distributing the ball. If he's going long often, that is by design of Arteta. It's then on him to execute that, which obviously was more questionable. But yeah, I absolutely understand why he did it.
If there's 20 restarts in a game for Arsenal and Raya's going long from 15, you don't think Mikel has told him to do that. It's like, of course, you know, that's, you know, the guy is obsessed with detail. So yeah, I'm sure at some point that would have been, you know, and obviously there's going to be a degree to which he says, you know, but I imagine it'll be similar to, you know, press. Okay, when they're in this situation, I'd like you to go long. And when they're in this situation, please, you know, try this. So, you know, we just have to see. But yeah, I think just finishing up on the Jesus discussion, if Martinelli and Saka are unavailable, I still think he's a good wide option. And especially against City, I don't know how you feel about this, but I always feel like he's not emotional. Maybe that's a bit Gary Neville analysis there. But I feel like he's got trying to prove himself a little bit, similar to Zinchenko. Whenever I watch them play, he's just slightly on the edge. You know, that moment where he brings the ball on and like throws it, it's stuff like that. You just go, come on, you're a senior player now. Roy Keane, senior players. No, but like you're a senior player now. Like, don't be doing that.
Yeah, I think Arteta wants his players to play with emotion at times, but in a controlled, restrained way. Yeah. You know, emotions can be positive and it can lead to, you know, motivational purposes, which I think Arteta wants from his side. But yeah, you're right to point out things that we can, you know, these marginal gains which we can do. Can we eradicate some of the issues, and that's perhaps one to look at. I think in regards to the Kivio, and I want to touch on Kivio. I think you're right to bring him up, and we'll do that now. He was shattered in the second half. That's why he came off. It wasn't like, for me, it wasn't necessarily a tactical decision beyond, we could see he was struggling a little bit, you know, because he played 120 minutes for Poland against Wales. He played 90 minutes for them against Estonia as well. And when you've got a player as good as Tomiyasu on the bench, you know, you can afford to bring him off. And I think I probably wouldn't start him against Luton either. I think we can afford to rest him against Luton. I could even give Gabriel a rest, I think, in that game. It might be a little bit risky, but I think Arteta needs to look at rotation in these next few weeks, because we've got a very heavy fixture schedule. When you've got Tomiyasu and you've got Zinchenko, use them. You know, you can swap out Gabriel for Tommy. You can swap out Kivior for Zinchenko and keep Saliba and White, who look completely fine. And have had more of a rest than those two have. So, yeah, I think that Kivior is really...
Thank you, Southgate and Deschamps.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, thank you. I suppose you have to thank them in some ways. Not so much for Rice and not so much... I say not so much for Deschamps' comments about Saliba, but maybe it'll just motivate him more. I don't know.
Mate, honestly, fine. Send him home. We'll have him.
Yeah, indeed. That, I think that is what my reaction was when I read out on the news show.
Yeah, sorry. If you don't think Saliba's at the level, like... genuinely fine. You know when you're so confident in something, you're just like, I actually don't care what you think. That's okay. All right. If you watch that game yesterday, arguably the two of the best teams in Europe, and he was man of the match, and you don't think he's good enough, okay. All right.
Yeah, everyone's entitled to their view, and if it benefits Arsenal, that's all I care about, to be honest. So Kivior, I mean, you wanted to touch on him, and I'm happy to let you wax lyrical about your thoughts on him.
Well, I think Rob Holding spoke about him a while ago, saying he's that quite like shy, retiring character. You know, it was only, 18 months ago he's playing in Italy, and he's, you know, still a young player and all these sorts of things. I'd like to see him, how do I put this? I think there's more of a kind of a growth as, I don't know him as a character, so I can't comment him as a character, but on the football pitch, I think there's a bit of growth there to be done in terms of believing he's the man. Like, I'd like to see that. I think that'll help his, and the reason I say it is because I think it will help his game. And just sort of, you know, stepping into that, you know, I could be Arsenal's left back. There's 100% a possibility that I could start for Arsenal. You know, I've been doing it. Like, why can't I keep that place if I keep going? I think there's a couple of things in his game that I'd like to see him improve on. I think confidence is a massive part of it. And then we'll start to see his passing range a little bit more. Because anyone who's watching for Poland when he plays for left centre back, he's raking those balls over. He's got a really good passing range. And I'd like to see that come into it for Arsenal. He's a little bit simple on the ball at times. And you know, I understand it. But, you know, again, that comes with confidence. At times, I think he gets caught a little bit square. He's still a little bit centre backy. I think I actually trust him against like the Dokus, and I know he doesn't play on that side, but the Rashfords, the more straight line players. It's more the Bernardo Silvas that I worry about now.
Well, Doku did come on that side.
Yeah, and I thought he looked all right.
Well, I was surprised that he was there, to be honest. Yeah, and I thought he did all right when he was on.
Yeah, I think he only faced him for a few minutes, but he looked all right. But yeah, it's the straight line players I'm fine with. It's the more tricky sort of ball manipulation, because he can get himself a little bit square. But again, you know, Ben White's still working on that, and it takes time. And again, all these principles are very easy for me to sit here on a podcast and say, oh, he needs to not get caught square against Bernardo Silva. Do you know what I mean? It's not the same thing as Sunday
top
league.
Top three player in the league.
You know, it's not the same. So yeah, it's just one of those things at the top level that will come. But I just, overall, to come in as he has done, play as consistently as he has done, and there's been a few moments where... I think maybe in the Porto game, there's a couple of moments where it was against Fulham. He has saved us a few times. And there's been a few moments where it's not really been talked about in this, you know, if it was a Saliba last minute, you know, header off the line, everyone would be waxing lyrical, understandably, and deservedly so. But Kivior has handled a lot over the last few weeks. And I just want to give him his flowers, because I think he's a great player.
Yeah, he's a great player. And I think when you give Kivior his flowers, it just inadvertently and indirectly also gives us the same flowers to Arteta and Edu. Edu, of course, for, you know, getting that deal done, the scouting regime behind the scenes for finding, because no one was talking about this kid. Like, when his name came up, I was scouring Italian experts, and even then...
You weren't watching the Slovakian League in 2021, Tom.
Exactly, yeah. I ended up speaking to a few people who watched some games of Spezia, and of course some people who watched a bit of Poland as well. But to find the information about him, to be able to give much of a tactical insight on him, was probably the most challenging player Arsenal have signed in the last few years that we've covered here. But Yeah, I think Borussia Dortmund were mentioned as a team that were also tracking him as well, which is, you know, never a bad sign that they're looking at a young player. So Arsenal have done very well. And I think not only that, but he's done exceptionally well to play a position that is not always his number one role. He was playing more of a centre-half position, had played left-back, had even played, I think, a couple of games in midfield as well. But to do that, not just for Arsenal, but to come on against Liverpool at 1-1 at half-time and play there, and then to be trusted to start this game as well and have trusted to be start the games that have obviously led through 2024 and become almost the established left-back in the starting 11 at the moment,
this point,
is quite the feat, for sure. Moving back to kind of the game as a whole and where it leaves Arsenal, I think before the game, if you'd have offered me a draw, I would have snapped your arm off for it. So I was very grateful that we got it. And as you pointed out, to get 4 points from both of our two fixtures against Liverpool and City this season is a big, big boost. But it does mean that we are now behind Liverpool in terms of the table, which has emboldened their fans rather hilariously online yesterday. The Liverpool reaction was something quite special. And I use that word lightly. But I think that Liverpool being there is far better than it being City being there.
I would agree. Yeah. It's tricky. I'm trying to write a video on this at the minute, and it's, you know, there's so many moving parts to every title race that there's not much use doing much projecting forward. But I think here's what we do know about City. Here's what we know about Pep, Arteta, and Klopp. Like, how do we categorize them broadly? I think Klopp is much more interested. No, let me go other way around. I think Arteta and Pep are massively interested in sort of stopping other people's strengths. If they know, you know, and you'll hear it a lot in their language. They say things like, if you allow, they'll kill you. Things like they'll say that, all that sort of stuff. Or they'll talk about other teams and say, they're so good in this. You know, there's almost a meme about Pep of how good other teams are. I think they're very aware of how other teams are. And Pep himself would say he's one of the most defensive managers in the world. And it's why defensively you look at the numbers there, and City and Arsenal are always up there. But because they have like Spanish, you know, managers, and you know, you might see them fire on the touchline, people don't think about it like that. I think Klopp is a lot more, I'm focusing on my team, I'm focusing on how we can maximize our strengths, we'll beat you 4-3 rather than 1-0. And I just, you know, the word sustainable has come up, which has kind of become a meme in the Liverpool online community, so I hear, you know, about, you know, Liverpool not being sustainable. But there's a reason for it. There is a reason for it. They're much less careful. They're much more transitional. They're much more play on the sort of the edge of the game. And by the way, Liverpool are the best team at playing on the edge of games. When a game's fine margins both ways, they've got so many difference makers. They've got so many players. They've got Anfield. They've got so many things going in their favor. They've got that 100%. But in my opinion, that's where the sustainability thing comes from, where, of course, you know, every title team, title winning team needs to win games in the way they did against Nottingham Forest. But, you know, the numbers they're conceding in terms of their XG, the amount of shots on target they're facing, it's all a lot less controlled than a City and an Arsenal. Now, both are ways of winning games. I would invite you to look at the last six Premier Leagues to see which is more likely to work, in my opinion. So as an ideology, you know, I think I said this today. When we say the Pep and Klopp era, I want the and Klopp in brackets.
Because
they've
used the side piece.
And I'm not taking it away, but the idea it's 50-50 is
it's just not true. It's not like Wenger and Ferguson. It's just not the same.
Even Wenger and Ferguson, there was a 7-year period where it's 4-3, and that's the Wenger and Ferguson, and then Ferguson's the better. But that
As soon as it ended, it was Ferguson only. Absolutely.
100%. In that period, though, it was Wenger and Ferguson. But, you know, Liverpool fans try and muscle themselves in on that conversation. And Klopp is I'm not taking anything away from Klopp. To come second to Pep Guardiola is to be one of the best coaches ever, by the way. But you can't.
That means Arteta is one of the best ever based on last season, then, right?
Yes, exactly. I get it. Look, Liverpool might win because it's football. It's football, you know, and that is what's so beautiful about this. You can control every single thing in a match. You can be brilliant every single phase of play. You can get your tactics right every week. One injury can kill you, or one moment can kill you, or one Mo Salah moment can kill us. So they might do it, but I always feel, you know, looking over a larger sample size, Liverpool have got that, they've got a less sustainable way of playing. And I know it's a meme, but it's a meme for a reason.
Yeah, no, and look, they've, as I mentioned before, you know, they've gone there time after time after time and failed to win. Mm-hmm. They could not do what Arsenal did yesterday. Arsenal could do what they did, but they haven't. You know, yeah, of course. Arsenal could attempt to do what Liverpool have done in the past, but it's seen them beaten, you know. Mm-hmm. And Arsenal have...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. And the same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with Mook Delivery. Are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Recognize that. They have built a squad which is able to be malleable enough to adapt and change depending on the opponents, depending on what the opposition is challenging you with, you know. And so I think that all of those things combined mean that Arsenal are going to be a side that are better equipped to deal with the challenges of not only the title races to come, and are going to be better equipped when, you know, Klopp moves on from Liverpool as well to whatever challenge the next manager, be it an Amorim, be it a, if they wait for Xabi in a year, which I don't think they will. Arsenal are, with the squad they've built, so much better adapted to what we have coming forwards. And with, you know, City's future, we don't know what that holds, you know, for them. I think it's in somewhat of a shame that we're already kind of 5 years into the Arteta project nearly, because we don't know how long he's going to be here for. I think he's going to be here for a significant period of time more.
So do I.
I think he will sign that brand new contract that will probably be another extension through to at least, I think, 2027. But there will be a day that he leaves. There will be a day that he wants a different challenge, that he wants to take things on, unless he does have this idea of emulating Arsene Wenger and taking things to new levels, which I'd love to see based on what I've seen so far. And I think we can have the success we've had under Wenger, under Arteta, based on what we've seen. But it needs to be proven in the next contract for me to legitimize that view. But this Arsenal squad that's been built is designed to be adaptable. It's designed to be able to take on these different challenges. And I mean, I'm not envious of whoever takes over from Klopp, because that squad is in potentially one of the worst places a squad that's been at the top of its game has been for a manager to come in and take over. I mean, Arsenal's wasn't great when Unai Emery came in at all, to be honest, either. And Guardiola will leave behind when he eventually does move on. I think Man City in a good place for the next manager to come in. Mm. But Liverpool is not in a good place for the next manager to take over, in my opinion.
It's funny. I mean, there's the managerial perspective, which I all, you know, name me a time when a manager has come in after a successful period under whoever, Ferguson, Mourinho, whatever, and immediately succeeded.
Mm.
But there just isn't. There isn't one. So whoever that. So I think Xabi Alonso.
Conte, the only one I can think of, like, maybe came in and.
Conte after.
Did he win the league straight away? I think he won the league in his first season at Chelsea.
Possibly, but I mean a successful, like, period. Do you know what I mean? Like,
sure. Fair enough.
Do you know what I mean? Like a successful, let's say,
era.
3+ year era.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Where coming straight in after, you know, there's always going to be an adaptation period. So I think based on historical precedent, unless you know, Liverpool prove me wrong, and I would love that. It'd be great for the league. Mm. And someone comes in and does that, but wouldn't love it as an Arsenal fan, but it'd be good for the league. But I think, I think Liverpool will inevitably have to go through a bit of a period of reinvention. I was talking about this yesterday. About like a rebuild, like a, you know, do teams need a rebuild? I was talking to my mate, and you know, teams are always threatening a rebuild. They're always threatening a rebuild. I can see people in the chat, Bob Paisley and Enrique. I'm not saying people haven't been successful. I'm saying an era of success. You know, 3+ years after 3+ years, essentially.
Enrique didn't come straight after Guardiola.
I don't think he did either. No.
Villanova, of course, I think was there.
Yeah. But yeah, so yeah, and teams are always threatening a rebuild. You could look at it both ways at Liverpool. You could look at it and say they've got Van Dijk, who's, you know, 32, 33, whatever he is, you know, his legs are going. You could look at Salah's probably off, you know, in the summer. Is Nunes the striker? You know, all you could look at it that way. Trent might be going to Madrid. Or you could say, you know, Trent's still, what, 26? Alisson's still got years left in him. McAllister's, you know, looks at the level if Nunes gets his shoe, you know. It's always on the precipice. It's always one way or the other. I think, yeah, so that will just depend on that managerial appointment. And to go back to what you're saying about Unai, I think what's often forgotten, I think it was Julian Laurens who said this week, is when Pep came in at Man City, they had just either just won the league or they won it in recent years.
Yeah, under Pellegrini.
When Klopp came in, they had nearly won the league the year before, or whatever, you know, or certainly recently. When Unai came in, when Unai came in, we hadn't won the league since what, 16 years?
2004, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So, or, you know, maybe 17, 15, whatever it is, can't do the maths.
Yeah, 13, I think 2017, 18 was Wenger's last season. I think that was it.
So a long time. So, yeah, it takes time to get to this point with Arteta. And I actually agree with you. You know, we knew that already, but, you know, it's another factor. Mm-hmm. And I think I agree with you that there is going to be now. I can see Arteta being here for another at least 5 years. Mm. I don't think he leaves until he wins multiple Premier Leagues and multiple Champions Leagues, because I think he must see
the opportunity of Pep and Klopp moving on. He must see it. Yeah,
he must. And I think so will Arsenal. You know, they'll see, like, who, basically the question mark, you know, I'm sure once they got Arteta in, saw those early green shoots, I'm sure part of their thinking of, like, if we think this is the right guy and he can get us there, you know, in 2020, can get us to somewhere we want to be by 2023, if this phase, when we're in phase two, you know, if he can get us to phase five, that will surely be when Pep and Klopp have left and there's a massive opportunity. I also, maybe throw this back to you, I wouldn't be surprised if we find out at the end of the season, if Pep wins the Premier League and the Champions League again, I wouldn't be surprised if he left.
Yeah. Just for a number of reasons. Chaos of the last season.
For a number of reasons. I don't think, I think you might want to get out of there before.
Oh, there's your thumbs up. There it is.
Yeah, right? Oh, you can do that one as well, can't you? Wait.
It does. Yeah, there you go.
so
love
stupid.
That. You're not the first guest that's happened to. Yeah,
I love it so much. I'll do this. Because Klopp's leaving. And that doesn't mean Pep's going to leave because of Klopp, but I'm sure he sees one of his biggest adversaries over the last few years is leaving. And he might, you know, there's very easily a part of this narrative, which is, well, you kept winning because Klopp left and you didn't have anyone who could come up against you. I think he sees Arteta as a bigger threat, but, you know, part of it. The charges are coming down the road. And I don't think he wants to be... And I think... I don't know. I think he might suspect something, or at least some of the charges will be proved. Does he want to be around for that conversation in the UK? I'm not sure he does. What more does he have to prove in English football? What more does Pep have to prove? And I'm sure there'll be other things. And finally, Pep as a character doesn't strike me as someone who would tell people he was leaving. I think he'd just announce it after he'd won. I think he'd win and go, I'm leaving. Thank you so much. I don't think he'd want that. And just very quickly to finish, I think when he was being asked about Klopp leaving, I remember an interview where they said something on the lines of, like, you know, is it tiring for you too? And Pep didn't really answer. He was just like, yeah, it's hard. Mm. It's hard. He didn't say, no, I'm cool. I've got loads of energy. He just said it's hard. So, yeah.
Indeed. As someone in the chat saying, where does Pep go after he leaves? I think Spain is the next obvious place.
Barca job's open, isn't it?
Do you think he'd go back? I think that Barca are in such a, like, Pep is, for me, the greatest manager I have ever seen. I wasn't old enough really to appreciate Sir Alex Ferguson. Obviously, he won far more in terms of a single club than Pep has. But, you know, Pep's gone across three leagues now and, you know, and taken those teams. I know that he didn't win the Champions League with Bayern Munich, but I think for me he evolved Bayern Munich as a club.
It's the only thing you could say.
No, it's the only thing that you have got against Pep is that he didn't win it. And obviously the other obvious argument is people have come up with is, well, he's always gone to kind of the team that are the biggest, or he's gone to the team where he's got the most money. But the thing is that, like, it doesn't matter. He's earned the right to go to those teams and then maintain their success. And I think Chelsea are a great example of, you know, managers going there, they're given all this money. It doesn't mean you're going to be successful. PSG have thrown money at the Champions League and never won it. It doesn't guarantee you anything, you know, just having money. It's about how you spend it, how you use the players that you've got, how you develop players like Rodri. You can't just buy Rodri and then turn and he just miraculously becomes the best midfielder in the world and one of the best Premier League midfielders we've ever seen. That happens through Guardiola's coaching. You know, talents like Foden come along, but they don't become the Foden talents that we see without a coach like Guardiola to nurture them. So Pep Guardiola is and has been for me the best manager I've ever witnessed or ever really been able to appreciate from the generation that I belong to. And I think that when he does move on from City, whoever comes in is not going to be able to do as good of a job as he has done. And you're right to point out that you're right to agree with the point that Arteta has to be seeing what's coming down the road, has to be seeing what is next in this next era. And I think Arsenal have recognised from the progression that we've made under him that Arsenal are in pole position to become that next dominant force in the Premier League, because the squad that we've got, yes, has got some experienced heads in it, but the key figures in this group are your Sakas, are your Salibas, are your Rices, which will be here for the next 5 years. Saliba is the one with the question mark next to him, perhaps most of all. Real Madrid, I always think, are, you know, lingering somewhere looking at Saliba. But Rice is going to be here for the next four or five years. Saka is going to be here for the next 4 or 5 years. Gabriel is going to be here, I imagine, for the next 4 or 5 years as well. You know, and these players are going to get into 30s. And I don't believe that, unlike Liverpool, who have seen Salah and Van Dijk go through and age and get to the point where they, like Klopp, are going to be replaced in the next couple of seasons. And there's not really anything to come from in terms of, you know, emulating their success. I know they've got some very good players that are young there at the club, but I don't see it getting to the same levels as Salah and Van Dijk. Whereas with Arsenal, I have such faith in this recruitment policy and this scouting network and the identification of talent that we will find players that will be able to come through. I mean, we started off this show by talking about Kivior, who people wrote off so quickly. Kivior's rise in such a short space of time, as Alex has brilliantly explained with, you know, the Slovakian example, it shows you what is capable of being found by this Arsenal team at the moment. And it gives you that hope for the future.
100%. And, you know, we never replaced Steve Round. So
that was always the crux. You know, we never did.
Never replaced Steve Round. So Pep might want the job.
It's an interesting point that, because Carlos Cuesta has been linked with a managerial move away from the club. I think, I don't know if Miguel Molina has as well, but I think that's one of the challenges. Like, Ferguson went through so many different groups of kind of, you know, coaching staff. Arteta is going to face that challenge as well. Nicolas Jurva, you never know, you know, because he is becoming such a profile at Arsenal. Could get, you know, swooned away by Real Madrid or somebody in the future. You never know. But how do you think Arteta will deal with the backroom changes that will inevitably happen?
Yeah, it's, as you say, it's inevitable. There will be change. You know, I'm not saying Pep will come and be his assistant, but I do think Pep might end up somewhere. Not saying that, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he went somewhere random and did, you know, ended up at UEFA or, you know, coaching some B team for a while just because he wants to. Do you know what I mean? That's the sort of thing he'd do. But you know, it's an example of people constantly move on and change and things happen that you don't expect, you know, and that's fine. I think, yeah, look, Carlos Cuesta looks like a manager in waiting. I rewatched that clip of him talking to Ben White. And, you know, when you communicate that well, you're going to be fine, whatever you do. And he's clearly got the actual ideas to back it up as well as the communication. So he'll go there. But what do I trust with Arteta? I trust a lot of things, but I trust his talent identification. You know, of course, there are individual examples that you can throw out. But I think with all of them, there are either extenuating circumstances. No one expected Willian to fall off in the way he did. No, like, don't sit there and say you thought in the summer of 2020 that he was going to fall off in the way he did.
You watched him at Chelsea. You're lying. He was brilliant.
Like, you are lying. The numbers, he fell off and he got rid of him straight away. That's the only player he's ever got rid of after 1 year. So, yeah. But then, you know, 80, 90% of his hit rate has been really good, or, you know, the player hasn't quite developed in the same way. Or the project's done that. And so a player like Sambi Lekonga, I think, is probably a top four player, but just the project's gone beyond him. So I don't worry about his talent ID. There is always talent. There is always talent. For me, it's environment. And I come back to, I have this example at the moment, like Paul Pogba, right? Timeline Paul Pogba's career. At any point, take a picture. you've got a different perception of him. He's a young prospect who can't quite get in the team. He's a superstar. He's ruined his career. He's a drug cheat. He's one of the best players in the world on his day. You can literally take any picture of, and it's the same player, by the way, who's doing the same things, but the public perception is different. Mason Mount, unbelievable young player, bags of talent, unbelievable, rotting at United. He's terrible. It's just environment. And when you put people in a positive environment, you see it in any field. Mm-hmm. I'm a firm believer that so many people have qualities within them that if they were in more positive environments that got that out of them and had people who believed in them, things can come out of them. It's like good management. It's good. You know, if you're a manager of any kind of firm and someone's struggling, you can find out what's going on. How can we help support you to get them? Exactly. So I trust that he can create that environment to get the most out of people and also pick people who are actually really, really good at their job. So if Saliba moves on, I trust Arteta to replace him. I don't think you can replace him directly, but I trust him to replace him in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that we would replace him pretty well. And I think also there's some, in the next 5 years, Max Domann will be 19. So, you know, you've got like, some of the talent coming through. And there's actually this
Chino summer, Obi will still be 12th.
He will still be a fetus, yes. But it is incredible to think of the talent that's coming through. And also Arsenal this summer, there is, and we've already seen it with a couple of signings that are trying to be done. Braden Clark's joined from Wolves. Kader O'Neill is the youngster who's coming from Blackburn, I think, a Northern Irish youngster. There's a verge of that deal happening. There's a focus on trying to find some of the best young talents in the world as well to join the academy and come through, which is something that we talked about on our last show that we did.
Yes.
And one of the things that we thought about was, well, if they're not getting enough minutes in the team, maybe it's because they're not good enough. And now it seems that Arsenal have recognised that and are making waves. And the fact that, you know, Max Domann is 14, he's playing in the under-18s. Chido Obi is 16. He's already played for the under-21s. He plays more regularly for the under-18s, but he has already played for the under-21s. Ethan Nwaneri at 15 was making his debut in the Premier League. You know, we have some very exciting talents at Arsenal coming through, and that also under Arteta, I think he will want to see, you know, if that, because I think that's the next step for him as a manager. Yeah. I know competitively we talk about winning the Champions League, winning the Premier League, but also as a manager, I think, as we talked about on the last show we did together, I think that for Arteta is the next step, is to be able to, because he established Saka and he established Smith Rowe before he lost his place in the team. But to get his own Saka, you know, as Guardiola has with his Foden. And, you know, even I like thinking of Saka as Arteta's, but the reality is he didn't give him his competitive debut and then bring him through. He's 90%, 99% Arteta's.
Yeah.
But you'll never get anyone not saying that Unai Emery is the guy that gave, you know, Saka his debut. So
I think we said on the last show, basically my point was, I felt the talent was there, but that's a subjective opinion. Either way, there was an issue. That was my sort of point. It was like, either way, we haven't got the talent, so let's address that. Or Arteta's not giving them the opportunities, so let's address that. For me, this the overarching thing I would say this to: do you think Arteta thinks that he's maximized the academy? Forget me. Do you think Arteta is sat there, as in, you know, not you, to everyone?
Yeah.
Do you think Arteta is sat there going, yeah, I've done the most I possibly could with the academy and get, you know, maximize that possibility? Because it is, as you say, you know, Arteta, he's talked about this before. If we want to be the best team in the world, then we have to. Wow. $50.
Do I have to split that?
Not at all. It's very kind.
I think what Gaz has said there, I will just point this out, Gaz. Thank you very kind donations. Are you two twins? Like both of your channels, keep up the good work. I feel like, Gaz, that I should refund you half of it so you can send the other half to Alex. But thank you. That's very kind indeed.
That's very kind, Gaz. I really appreciate it. The thing, you know, Arteta said something about the stadium was like, if we want to be the best team in the world, we have to have the best stadium and atmosphere in the world. And it's things like that. And you go, there's primary, secondary, and tertiary things to judge a manager by. Primary, winning games. Always win games. Are you winning games? That is all that matters. Yeah. Everything else, secondary, tertiary. But then the tertiary stuff, it is stuff like club connection. It is stuff like, Are we absolutely maximizing our commercial revenues? Are we maximizing everything we can get out of the academy? Are we ensuring we're in for the best young players? Are we ensuring that our facilities are the best? All those things, they're not the main job of the manager, and he's just going to be helped by it. But surely these are things that we can work on. And I think I said at the time, the youth thing isn't priority numero uno, but it's also not a problem, I think was my thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you ask that question about has he maximized it, the answer is no. But I think had he have maximized it, it would have been to our detriment.
Arguably. And could he have so far? Maybe not. Do you know what I mean? But my argument was always, has he? And people were saying, well, he can't do anything else. I said, he can.
he can do more. That's okay. Because there are games where we could have played them, Lons and Wolves. Yeah. You know, Mario Kojadubri is sitting there going, how on earth have I not made my debut at senior level yet? You know, so because there have been games where he could have done that, but he didn't. And I think that comes from a trepidation. That it's going to cost him, even in a game where there's not much on the line. Mm. If a kid comes on and we somehow concede points, I think that would get held against him. And he would think that it would. He's just so meticulous. He's such a perfectionist that he can overthink things. And I think that's something that maybe he will learn to kind of build up something of a buffer actually in himself with certain decisions he makes, and maybe even learn to forgive himself if he does make an error or two, because you have to be able to do that. You can't linger on the errors that you have made, and Arteta has made mistakes. You know, we know games in which he's persisted with Xhaka at left back, you know, things like that that he continued to do, and I found myself pulling my hair out at it. But he's recognised that how he needs to change his team. He's recognised that you can use Kivior as not an inverted player, and instead invert Ben White from the right hand side as an example of this season, where he's recognised that inverting Kivior was the wrong option, and actually flipping it to the other side has made things work. Whereas in the past, maybe he would be too stubborn to do that, as he was maybe with Tierney for a little bit too long. So
we play another certain gentleman whose name rhymes with Sob Tolding.
Yeah, sure. So we could have brought Kivior in sooner. Yeah, but that's, oh goodness me, I don't want to reminisce about the failings of the end of last season. That's too painful. I guess we should end the show maybe then on a more positive thing. How are you feeling off the back of that draw and where that leaves us with 9 games to go with the, I think what people would say is the toughest run of any of the 3 teams?
Yeah, I was asked about that. I don't know on that one. Yeah, I don't know how I feel. I think you can make an argument for all of them, really. And again, you know, when people sort of do the fixture comparison, they sort of go, well, my team playing them, that would be our hardest fixture. And I sort of go, like, for example, Liverpool going away to Everton is a very different prospect to City going away to Everton. It's Goodison Park, it's a different, you know, the Merseyside derby, there's history there, that, you know, it's different prospects every single time, and one team is going to be max, you know. I think City will struggle a lot more with Villa than Liverpool would, you know what I mean? So it's a kind of different prospects and how teams play. So I think there's an argument either way. I think you could make an argument that Arsenal have the toughest fixtures, but you can go elsewhere. Look, I think we're in a strong position in a number of different areas. I think we are. I think in terms of our squad, sounds like we've only got Timber to return. You know, I appreciate Saka didn't look fully fit and came off, but I think he'll be fine, and he might play some part in Luton, but certainly we've got a lot to come back. Liverpool has still got Trent, Jota, Alisson, Thiago, if we'll ever see him again, Bacetic, you know, all these he's gone.
Matip. You know,
Matip is out obviously for the season and so on. So they've got a lot of players, and obviously City have got a bit of an issue at the back, and you don't know. So on that side, I think the recovery time, obviously City are playing in the FA Cup, they've got more fixtures, so there's something there. As I say about the sustainable football with Liverpool, you know, they're playing slightly more on the edge than maybe Arsenal and City. We've got superior goal difference. Who knows? It's all, as I said earlier, you can't project too far forward. I think all you can do is look at your position and sort of track a bit of a pathway through. But I do feel confident. I still think City will win it. I've said it from the beginning and I'll stick by it. I still think they've got it. They've got everything. They've got a world-class manager. They've got
knowledge.
The knowledge, the experience, the toolkit, different types of players, different ways of winning games, so on and so forth. I still feel we're just lacking a little bit of inevitability, just that one player with maybe, you know, one or two moments here and there. You know, is it a replacement for an Nketiah? Is that someone who could, you know, do you know what I mean? It's that sort of thing where I just go, I look at Man City squad and I'm going through and I'm like, mate, Ortega would start for 17 out of the 20 Premier League clubs.
Yeah. Like, when Nketiah came on against Porto in extra time, I was like, oh my God. With all due respect to Nketiah, mate, I was like, oh no. Like,
conversation to be had. Arteta hasn't used him. He's barely touched him. I don't know what's happened there.
Did you find it interesting that Nelson wasn't on the bench, but Smith Rowe was yesterday?
Yeah. I think all three of those, you know, you're looking through and you're going, okay, well, City having a defensive crisis, bringing on one of the best academy players we've ever seen come out of England, and Josko Kvaradzic signed for £80 million. Like, it's like, that's the level we've got to reach. So, you know, I just still
Grealish and Doku for 180 million euros, whatever it was in us. Yeah, crazy.
So we're still in that position, and it's just going to take another summer. I think it's going to take another essentially round of signings. My prediction is that we're going to sign a goalkeeper, a centre-back, a defender, a midfielder, an attacker. That's what I feel we're going to do, as we did last summer. And we move on. I just think it's, you know, Arteta's going to be here, I think, at least another 5 years and possibly beyond that. So, I know not everyone will feel this way, and I appreciate it's just my opinion, but we can take this season.
Yeah, I think I don't think it's like disastrous if we don't win the league. I think it's a missed opportunity for sure. But it's, there's, as I say, I keep saying, there's still so much more to go. If we'd have beaten City, and I said this before, and I got a little bit of stick for this. I said, if we'd have beat City and not won the league, I would have been really disappointed, because I felt like was an opportunity in some ways where you go, you're 4 points clear of them. You're top of the table. It's in your hands. I know we're level with Liverpool at that point with goal difference in our favour, but every game that we have left, despite it being the toughest, I look at every game we've got left and go, yep, should win that, should win that, should win that, should win that. So it's just, I love this from Mike, who says, three things that must happen to win the league. We win all our games, City don't, Liverpool don't. There you go, Mike. It's easy. Really easy. But to take that question maybe a little bit more serious to close out, I think one thing that must not happen is we lose a very important player. And I think there are some players in this team that are irreplaceable. Saka is one. Odegaard is another. Rice is another. To an extent, you've got Partey coming back, but Rice has just been the difference. And then Saliba, I think, is the other. Even though Gabriel I like more, I think you could play Saliba and Kivior or Saliba and Tomiyasu, and it wouldn't have as much of a detrimental impact as losing Saliba. Mainly because we don't really have a right-sided centre-half. We have more left-sided centre-halves in Kivior and Tommy. So, what do you think?
I said this earlier. I think if we go to Luton and win comfortably with the likes of Tomiyasu, Partey, Trossard, Smith-Rowe, Vieira, those types of players, the sort of first 16, 17 players playing a big part, I feel a lot more confident about going to win the league, because that's going to be the difference. You know, we've got a lot of fixtures coming up. In terms of what's got to happen, I think we've got to see... So a point Theo Walcott made yesterday on Sky, which I think is important, is Arsenal have just given everyone a blueprint on how to play against City and stop them, in terms of how he played yesterday. And I think that could be significant, because no one's quite given Arsenal at that quality level the ability, you know, teams have beaten Arsenal, but not in a sort of a significant formulaic way. They have stopped Arsenal in terms of the mid block and you know, Porto and sort of, what's the word, frustrated us, but consistently beat us and sort of a way of beating us over the last four, you know, have we conceded 4 goals in 4 months or something like that? It's something crazy. Yeah. It's some mad stats. So there's not some crazy blueprint that's obvious with Arsenal. I don't know. Look, we're, as always in football analysis, working with scraps of information. I don't know. But I just think my most rational take is that City have everything. We have almost everything, and Liverpool have a little bit less than us and City, but it's football. Anything could happen.
Indeed. Drew, thank you so much for the kind comment. It's a dream collab. Two of my favourite YouTubers together. Thank you so much for the kind comment, and to all of you that have left some very kind comments throughout. Alex, it's always an absolute pleasure to catch up, and we shouldn't leave it so long as we did this time, because it was great when you had you on last time, of course, as well. Tell people they can find you and what you're going to be up to.
You find me on The Different Knock on YouTube. You find me also on The Canon Podcast on YouTube and on Twitter @AMOnFootball.
There you go. So thank you once again to Alex. Make sure you do go and click the link in today's video title. It will take you straight to the Different Knock, and you can subscribe over there. Congrats on 60K, by the way.
Thank you, mate.
Recently hit that. Fantastic.
Appreciate
stuff.
Appreciate it.
And yes, thank you for everyone that's been listening and is listening on Catch Up as well. I'll be back with you, of course, bright and early tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. as always, as we build up to the next game. And it's gonna be like this for the next 6 weeks, where we just go, oh, we've just finished a game. Oh, there's another game, because that is our life now. Six games every, I think we've got six games in the space of 16 or 18 days, something crazy like that. It's more than 60, maybe 20, but yeah, something crazy like that is what we've got. So it's going to be fun. And you can, of course, stick it out with us here on TGT. So make sure you do that. Drop a like, subscribe if you're new. And as always, up the Arsenal. It's the 90 plus minute. All your mates around, and you've got a McNuggets share box ready to go, and you know a late winner's coming. Your mate's already got booked for a double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfection. Order now on the McDonald's app for your McDelivery. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.